And I have to say, as I'm listening to the music, I'm wondering, what part of New England is this composer from? And then, you know, I realize Paris is not part of New England.
No. Actually, it will never be, you know.
No. But you got into the spirit of the place and the time without any kind of cheap, sentimental toning down to period music. I mean, it's very modern music, but it's not completely inconsistent with the time.
Yes. It was something that we discussed very early on with Greta. And I must say that the way she structured the film is so incredibly bold and modern and smart and genius, I would say. The movie is not going chronologically like the story, you know, they're very young and they get a bit older and then they're adolescent and they're a bit older. And no, she plays like the memory going by moments, you know, you switch from childhood to adolescence and you see these kids growing up, but not in a chronological way. And that helps a lot for me to imagine what the music could bring to that nonlinear storyline. The beauty of it also, you know, the location, the nature around the houses, the seasons passing by. It's very strong in the film and very beautiful. So I guess that it did influence me a lot in the way I wrote the score.
Yeah. As movies inevitably do. You know, that's just...
they should.
That's kind of the job. Yeah. That's kind of the job. Well, the man who knows that job pretty well, the two-time Oscar-winning composer Alexandre Desplat, has stopped in this evening. Alexandre Desplat, welcome back to KUSC.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here again.
Since last we talked, you've premiered a new opera. Mm. And, of course, you've been writing some film music, too.
Yes, I had this short story by Kawabata that I loved very much. And, ironically, it's called Silence. And it's a very beautiful story about the impossibility of being an artist anymore, because it's the story of a writer who had an accident and he can't write anymore. He can't talk, he can't write. And there was something very deep and beautiful about that I wanted to explore musically. And I wrote this strange combination of instruments in the gagaku. The imperial music of Japan, they're often groups of three instruments. So I used that idea. And there's three flutes, three clarinets, string trio, and one percussionist. So it's a small chamber opera and only one soprano, a baritone, and a narrator. But exploring, you know, the possibility of vocal is different. And without the support of images is quite a challenge. And many a times I felt being on the edge of the abyss when I was writing. So I had to, you know, be very careful and sometimes step back.
Sure.
It's a very difficult thing to do, to write for the stage, for an opera.
Yeah. Now, how many of the previous Little Women had you seen? You know, there were three major ones to date.
I had seen the one from the 40s. Was it Lew McCarrie?
Yeah.
And the one of the 90s. And that's the only two that I had seen.
Yeah.
And I didn't go back too far, you know, in history, because I didn't want either to be influenced somehow by the story, missing something. And as a child, I did read the book because my sisters had it. In France, it's named Les Quatre Filles du Docteur March, The Four Daughters of Dr. March, which is very strange because it's the other way around, as the English title is about the women. This one is about the man who's the father, who's not there during the film.
Yes, exactly.
For 2 hours, the father is not present. But the book has his name.
Yeah. Did you spend any amount of time thinking about American elements for the music itself? Because there are times when it sounds very American.
No, I did not. Maybe it's because I've been working a lot in America for the last 15 years.
It could be.
No, well, maybe subconsciously, when you think about the 19th century or the end of the 19th century, the Civil War, the beautiful nature around you, of course you can think about what you would call Americana kind of score. Coplandish, how do you say?
Either one,
okay. Okay, music by Copland, by Aaron Copland, you know, where the wide plains of the Midwest appear as soon as you listen to the music. So maybe subconsciously there's a bit of that. But the orchestra that I've put together is rather small. It's not a huge, grand sound. It's only a chamber string orchestra, one harp, one flute, one clarinet, and two pianos, because I wanted to have the number four, the four daughters, somehow. So we have four hands of piano. And, you know, there's no French horns and huge melodies that sound like from the distance through the Appalachians.
Yes.
So maybe there is in the intimacy of the melodies and of the sound something that, I don't know, it's hard to analyze that way for me.
Yeah. So this is, what, her second film as a director? And the inevitable question is, how was she to work with, Greta Gerwig, how was she to work with as a director?
She was so eager to hear music and to hear the music that I would deliver for her film that she was very enthusiastic, and I would write a piece for a moment in the film, and she would receive it and say, wow, it's wonderful. And in the meantime, before she came back to me, I already had another idea, which I wrote and sent. And she said, oh, but I like the second version too. And sometimes I already was working on the third version, which she would also appreciate. So at the end, she just took whatever she wanted from what I sent. And, but, you know, the movie is not, aside from some very precise moments, the movie is full of the same energy, the same youthful energy, full of joy, full of, there's a buoyancy, the way she's directed the actors is so fun and modern. It's a difficult word to use, but when you look at it, it doesn't look or sound like a period movie. It could be today. The costumes, the makeup, the hair, the way they talk, the way they move, the way they dance, everything is contemporary, and that's really beautiful. There's nothing restrained about them. And it's so much different from the previous versions, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, while you were writing the score, you were in Paris. She was in New York. She was busy having a baby.
Yeah.
So.
No, of course. We would speak through Skype. She was very open to my suggestions, and she left me a lot of freedom, finally. You know, once we have decided that this moment of the film should be more melancholic or this one more active, then it went very smoothly. And until the recording, which was fabulous in New York with fantastic musicians, mostly from the Met, we had a great, great experience.
Yeah. So in other words, she's one of those directors who just realizes that music is so important in a film, and that's the composer's job. So let the composer do the composer's job, in other words.
Yeah, that's true. I do think we need guidance from the director, but at times it can become a constraint if the director is afraid, or you can feel that he's not at ease with music and he doesn't want you to be too free because it scares him. The more you're free, the better you are, I think, because there is a very strong frame when you write a score for a film, from the images you write, you're watching, from the length of the sequences that you have to write music to. But in these frames, if the director leaves you free and asks you to surprise him, then it's fantastic. You've got the happiest job you could imagine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a formula that's worked fairly well for maybe the most successful director-composer partnership in history with 20-plus films together. Steven Spielberg is delighted to have John Williams do whatever John Williams wants to do. And he says, every time he elevates my film to a level I didn't really suspect was there.
Yeah, this association is so unique and so incredible through the years that each time the scores of John Williams are a surprise. I always, you know, I'm looking always for the release of these scores because I learn each time a new idea, a new... People think that John Williams is writing the same music all the time. No, he's changing each time because his knowledge of music is so wide and so huge that he challenges himself all the time. It's so complex. And yet it sounds so simple, but it's so complex and so sophisticated.
Yeah. Maybe when you get a chance, watch the one with Katharine Hepburn, because it's just such a totally different take. It's, you know, the most, you know, period-centric version of it. But Katharine Hepburn is still Katharine Hepburn. I mean, it's like, not that she wasn't a great actress, but it's like she walked out of the Philadelphia Story into the Civil War. You know, it's just, it's a wonderful, wonderful film. But
okay.
So is this one. I'm not betraying any secrets here. Alexander Desplat is my guest tonight here on 91.5 Classical KUSC. It really does have a chamber feel, the score. And so many of your best scores do, because coming out of the tradition of French film, it's, I don't want to say it's a minimalist tradition, it's not at all, but it's making do with much smaller forces and making do with really subtle musical language. And it's something that serves this picture very well.
Yeah, you know, this film is mostly in a house, and we watch siblings growing up with a very kind and benevolent mother, and the most exotic person they meet is the neighbor, which is just next door. And the neighbor has a grandson, and this grandson, of course, is handsome and young and becomes friends with the girls. The location is secluded. It's not, we're not going into a wide traveling world. It's not, an adventurous movie where you go from India to South America. It's just there in this little piece of land in New England, and the music could not be huge and bombastic and has to capture that intimacy, this gentleness. There's so many elements, you know, the innocence, the loss of innocence, the childhood, the growing up, the buoyant emotions of adolescence, the kindness of the mother, her generosity, the benevolence with the poor neighbors, the dignity of this family, which is also poor. The March family, they're not rich, but they have a dignity and a joy for life and an appetite for life, which is beautiful. And the music has to capture all that at the same time, like a millefeuille.
Exactly. Sounds like it was a very positive experience all the way around, working on this picture. It's not always. I mean, I hate to betray a secret here, but, you know, occasionally composers and directors don't quite get on the way they should. But this seems like, you know, one of those ideal partnerships.
Yes, I must say that I think, but it started with very good spirit, because when we met for this movie, Greta told me that she had wanted to work with me since she had heard the score of Birth in 2004, I think, somewhere there. So she really had a passion for that score at the time, and I could feel that her desire to get from me something special was strong. It was not fake. It was not just getting a name. It was something that was deeply in her emotional system since 2004, because she had loved that score and listened to it a lot. And so she felt that we could together do something interesting, and the trust she had in me was immense.
Yeah, and of course that must make it so much easier. Not that any film score is going to be easy, but it, you know, just talking in relative terms, you know.
No, of course it makes my life easier, because I can feel the desire. You know, it's like if you're living around with people who you have no connection with, and spending a day or two or 3 days or a trip with somebody on the boat, and you, there's no connection between the people on the boat. It's very hard. You want to jump out of the sea, and you can't. Of course, it's a big difference when the director starts with a positive energy and keeps it that way. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. Well, again, the film is Little Women with a score by Alexander Desplat. And as always, we'll be watching on Oscar night.
We shall see about that.
Thanks for stopping in.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much.